It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is an occasional MFF contributor and director of a fantastic horror film named Interior that won Best Thriller at the Atlanta Film Festival, Best Director and Best Sound at the New York City Horror Film Festival, Best Horror Feature Film at Shriekfest Film Festival 2015, and Audience Award Feature at Knoxville Horror Film Festival. He also spent the last year tracking down and fistfighting all the people who wrote negative reviews for Michael Mann's 2015 film Black Hat. It's Zachary Beckler.
I'm still going through them. There's a list.
Hey, so thanks for joining me, Zach. And I saw that last weekend you were in Kansas and you fist fought about six people out there last weekend.
They just kept coming at me Chris Hemsworth couldn't be a hacker. And you're like, do you see the guy he's based on? Of course he can be a hacker. Guy's ripped.
And I mean, do you let these people know in advance that you're going to fist fight them?
If I have to, I will. But most of the time they're going to run away first they aren't as devoted to hating Black Hat as much as I am devoted to loving Black Hat.
So if they run away from you, mm-hmm. Do you consider that a win? Do you still pursue them like the creature from It Follows, or do you just kind of go, they learned their lesson?
I mean, they have nowhere else to turn because I burned the house down. So so when they run away, I'll take the house. It's fine. You get it.
I watched Black Hat recently, man. I liked it. And I was reading about it. And I guess the scene where she goes to the bank with the thumb drive. They went and mm-hmm. talked to a bunch of security people, cybersecurity people, and they're like, yeah, that's how it would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's he does his research, Michael Mann.
So it actually is that's pretty much how hacking would go down.
Yeah, it's kind of a how to hack, that movie. Also, how to, stay ripped in prison.
Yeah. by doing push-ups, right?
Doing push-ups, reading Folcott.
And they never work out normally in prison. Like Nick Cage and Con Air, right? He does all those funky workouts. Then in Startup, yeah, Jack O'Connell doing a bunch of burpees. And then in this one, he's doing these inverted push-ups. Like nobody just does push-ups in prison.
No. It's I guess it's not cinematic enough, a push-up. They have to do something a little special. Like, no. This guy knows what he's doing. This guy will mess someone up.
He's graduated from push-ups.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting fact that you make, is watching people do push-ups is boring.
Yeah, you have to put a little spice to them, their push-ups. It's got to be one hand, it's got to be a clap.
And G.I. Jane, right? Wasn't she doing one-arm push-ups? And she was doing one-arm pull-ups.
And Travis Bickle is doing the clap in between, and and the sound is
We're on to something.
Yeah.
I have never thought about this.
That's the one thing I tell my students, you have push-ups in your movie. It's not very exciting to watch. Every one of you has push-ups in your movie. Why are you filming it so standardly? I know, you're going for realism.
Now, that was kind of a really bad epidemic between, 2015 and 2016, when there's a lot of student films that just focused on people doing push-ups.
Yeah, it was strange that... I guess they were really influenced by the insurge of push-up films coming out of Italy.
Yeah. didn't they do Wine and the push-ups? And then they did the World War II film. They did what's that World War II film based in Italy? It's called Mussolini.
La push-up de Bella. Yeah. The push-ups are beautiful.
And it's starring that guy who did Roberto Benigni, right? But he kind of
had a really interesting technique too. He was like, he did two hands, but instead of a clap, he would slam his face on the ground and then pick himself back up.
Yeah, he would just
drop. Like, oh, you're yeah. It was just like it was brutal but funny.
You know, but then somebody was kind of like, you know, when you go down in a push-up, that's when you get some good you get some good workout in there. But he just flopped on his face, so he's only basically doing. He's only doing half a push-up, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, the up part is really the hard part. Coming back down, yeah, that takes some strength as well. But I think you gain a lot more muscle in your face when you just smash down.
You get some character.
Yeah, you get character. He's unrecognizable now. He really transformed for that performance.
Like, and it's kind of boring because it's like, hey, you know, like, hey, you got to like all these movies, people have strategic scars, right? They look awesome on people. And they're like, hey, you know, how did you get those scars? They're just push-ups. Like, no one's going to be interested. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, we all know that, like, the makeup industry is fraudulent and actors actually put the scars on their face. And
he went method on this one.
He did.
I think this year in an interview with the Village Voice, he's like, I regret it.
No, I think what he said was, urgh.
Yeah. And he still got nominated for an Oscar for that. It's crazy.
He did, but he didn't climb on the seats this time.
He fell. He just fell on the ground when he won.
Yeah, crawled up to accept, crawled up the stairs.
Then he did the Jack Palance thing instead of one-handed when he accepted his Oscar. He just fell on the ground.
Well, that was a really sad moment because like you could tell he really didn't want to do it again. Like he did a whole movie of them. He didn't want to do it again. The whole audience, Meryl Streep was like, do it. And it's like, I didn't say no to that. And then
the peer pressure got him.
I think he's out of the hospital now. Yeah. They did an interview with him. He thought he was Fellini.
And you know what's crazy is Cate Blanchett was supposed to be the star of Mad Max Fury Road, but she slipped on the blood that he left on the stage from his push-up.
That's true.
And she blew her knee out. And so Charlize Theron became Furiosa.
And that's also why Cate Blanchett's body is entirely CG for some reason in Thor 3.
All because
blew her knee.
See, you know, yeah. So if you guys haven't noticed, I've known you for what, 17? When did you start at AMC Theaters?
Oh, I started in 2000, and I think you were around maybe that summer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Thanks. I've known Zach for almost about 18 years. We lived in St. Pete. We actually, he's one of the few people that I still know that saw my terrible cover band in college. And I think we made
that was 2005.
Holy crap. That was after my mohawk. You saw my bald cover band days, not my mohawk cover band days.
Yeah.
And then we made, I think, the best Doritos commercial in the history of the planet.
Yeah. Doritos didn't think so, but yeah.
So we got this commercial.
Best friends eat Doritos.
I think if I can find it on YouTube, I'll put it up on the post that I do for this. It's I'm sleeping in a bed and you hear some chewing and I wake up and there's Zach wearing a fog hat and a robe eating Doritos, just basically watching me sleep. Like, you're just some creeper who's in my home watching me sleep. So I wake
up and
you
just start screaming, right? Just start screaming.
Like any normal human would. But then I noticed you were eating Doritos and I'm like, can I get one of those?
And then there's a little theme song. It's just best friends eating Doritos. And I remember vividly, my hand is like doing a weird like Spider-Man-y pose around you.
Yeah, you gave me
you eat the Doritos.
You gave me a hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fog hat, which was your hat.
Yeah, I love that idea. I mean, it's too dark.
That was back in the TV days.
Yeah. It's probably too dark for mass appeal. But I mean, what was this guy? Yeah, what do you think that guy was trying to get out of it? Like, he wanted the guy to wake up, right?
I don't know. He's eating the Doritos loudly. I don't know how you eat Doritos quietly. So I think he's just, like, watching the show.
Like, you know when you get into a movie and you're just knocking your popcorn out?
Yeah. He seems genuinely upset and surprised when you start screaming.
Like, he would just, like, he probably would just leave after a while, like, when the bag's gone.
He would go get another bag. I think he's that guy. He bought a couple bags for that night.
All right, so I'll add this video if I can find it to the post, because I'll
think about some. Those. My film students, like, find that shit too. Like, I saw your video and I'm like, oh no.
I'm surprised they're still up.
Oh yeah, I think they're still up.
I mean, that shows, you know, that's where
they might be.
We were a bunch of industrious, didn't know any better, St. Petersburgians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you notice that St. Petersburg got cool as soon as we left?
Yeah. I think it waited. Now it has all these great breweries and, like, yeah, a good food scene.
It's like hipster culture, but it's nice hipster culture. And it's like, did you know I was, like, here? And so you just kept that. He just kept that to itself.
I am kind of glad that I left after all the breweries, because you knew me back in the day. Me with all those breweries, I would have been a nightmare. All right, so
no comment.
Yeah, that says enough. All right, so what we're gonna do first is we're gonna kind of get into the topic, but we're gonna kind of talk about an Oscars recap, then we're gonna talk about Annihilation. But we do have a listener question, and it's from Megan. And I just wanted to read this out online. It's, if you could switch the winner for one Academy Award winning category this year, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yeah. So for me, I was thinking, like, I wanted to give Baby Driver best editing, but Lee Smith has never won an Oscar before. And Dunkirk is amazing. So I didn't want to take an Oscar from Lee Smith. Mm-hmm. And then I figured, since Guillermo del Toro won for The Shape of Water, aka Bathroom Property Destruction via Water, I would switch.
Yeah, with no like mold or anything growing after that.
I had water damage in my house, dude, and it was miserable getting all, like, the drywall and everything fixed and flooring. And that business was not doing well, and she cost them a lot of money for her rendezvous with the sea beast. And that felt very selfish to me.
It's so whimsical. Oh, all the water damage though. I couldn't.
I was angry in the theater. So I was like, you know what? I love Guillermo del Toro, so let's keep the director Oscar for him. And let's switch Best Picture. Let's give it to Dunkirk. Because I don't think any film was bigger or better than Dunkirk. And Nolan produced it, so he would have gotten an Oscar. And I think Dunkirk is just a fantastic film. So I'm giving it to Dunkirk.
Yeah. Of the nominees, I think Dunkirk was my favorite. And I think it was the strongest film, which was such a nice, refreshing rebound from Interstellar. But, you know, I don't hate Interstellar. You could do better, Chris. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I watched it again. And aside from Matthew McConaughey saying Murph a lot, dude, I teared up watching Interstellar. I didn't cry.
Yeah.
I was like, that movie, it pulled my heartstrings.
I was with it until, like, the last third. It goes a little Sunshine, and then a little 2001 for Dummies.
Oh man!
Like if Dave was going through the monolith in 2001, and then a robot was just in his ear going, "Hey Dave, do you see that? It looks like a five-dimensional thing." Da, 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 da. Oh look, you're an old man there. I think this has to do with blah 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 blah. It's like over-explaining robot.
Would you rather have an over-explaining – if you're in space, do you want an over-explaining robot or under-explaining robot?
Depends on how long I'm in space. If it's like a Castaway kind of situation, yeah, I'm probably going to want, like, to talk a lot.
Oh, no. What category do you think you'd switch around? I know I just dropped
that. And it has to be, like, something that was nominated in that category?
No.
So, like, that's a switcher? Yeah. I want to keep it to nominees, though. I'll just – I'm going to give myself constraints. I agree with, you know, Baby Driver would have been good for editing. would have been good for sound mixing, because I think the mix of Baby Driver was better than the mix of Dunkirk, which if you could tell me three lines that Tom Hardy says in that movie, I would give you a dollar.
I got it right now. Wait, he's on me. And then he goes, I'm on him.
I got to send you a dollar now. The one I think I would have given Daniel Day-Lewis Best Actor over Gary Oldman. And I love Gary Oldman, and Gary Oldman needs an Oscar, and I'm glad he has an Oscar. And the one note he played in Darkest Hour was played perfectly. But it was one note. And Daniel Day-Lewis, that his performance, and maybe it's just the movie around it, but his performance in that movie has stuck with me for weeks and weeks on end. Like, the second time I saw Phantom Thread, I was pretty convinced, oh, this might be the best movie ever made. It's probably not. But at that moment in time, it's definitely, if not There Will Be Blood, my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson film.
I loved Phantom Thread, man. I think it has the best pronunciation of the word raspberry since Dracula, Dead and Loving.
Oh, yes.
The way...
Raspberry.
I love... Like, Vicky Creeps, right? She is just... She was something else.
Yeah, I want to say Krebs, but it's pronounced Creeps.
Is it really?
But it's pronounced Creeps.
Oh, wow. And Leslie Manville. And I love Daniel I love Daniel Day-Lewis when he's not playing when he's not playing Lincoln. I like Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood, like Bill the Butcher. Like Lincoln.
Yeah.
I didn't like him. Lincoln was like the film I liked that I'll never watch again.
I get that.
Do you feel like it's a waste having him play someone that there's already like... You know, anybody would have played him like that. You know, not as good. But I like him better when he adds a Day-Lewisian. Mm-hmm.
I don't think there would... The thing he does with Lincoln, especially in the vocal performance, which makes him this kind of very tender and almost like struggling to get the word out, kind of this like weakness in him. And then like it explodes out in that one scene. I am the president of the United States. And it's like that arc that performance takes, could have been just like just pure glorification of Lincoln, which, you know, a lot of actors, I think Gary Oldman would have probably gone that route with it, just kind of playing the one note.
Yeah.
But I think Daniel Day-Lewis like really finds the eccentricities in Lincoln. I've watched Lincoln a couple times since, and I was surprised at how rewatchable it was.
I like James Spader in it.
Because I like James Spader in it, and I like just the mechanisms of plot that go into getting this bill passed. Just like all the con man antics that they have to go through.
Now, if you're leading me to believe, you're saying that Daniel Day-Lewis, his Lincoln character, basically became Al Pacino at the end.
Hoo-ah! At the present.
He's just dancing with everyone in there. He's like doing a two-step.
I'm a fan of man.
This is nowhere near what we're talking about, but Adam Sandler got Al Pacino to sing about Dunkachinos in Jack and Jill.
Yes.
Like, that's pretty impressive.
So I think Al Pacino's at a point in his career where he just doesn't give a fuck. And what I've heard from people who've worked with him, and I won't name names, I just like maybe producers that work with him on recent films, he doesn't want to be there. And you keep showing up late, Al. Is everything okay? I just don't want to do it. I don't know. How about we make your call time an hour later? Will that be better? Yeah, that'll be better. Let's do that. So that's Al Pacino right now.
Oh, yeah, I like it. And it's kind of like they could get it over with quicker if they just wanted to get it done with.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time waiting on film sets for people showing up late. And, I'm not going to say what I was working on, but I was working on a music video, and these people just didn't want to do it. And so I walked up to them, and I was like, hey, guys, there's an after party, right? And they're like, yeah. I was like, well, you're going to go to that. They're like, yeah, we're probably going to miss it because of this. I'm like, well, if you go get your scene, like if we go get the next scene done where you have to rescue an impersonator of Obama, you can go to the after party and we're done. They're like, oh, that's a great point. So then we got the music video done and, you know, I was out of there 4 hours later. But yeah, just get it done, right? Good old Jack.
I think Pacino was the star of that film, so it was a problem.
Oh, yeah, never mind. So, I was trying to think about what films he's been starring in.
I mean, he wasn't playing a record producer or anything.
So.
I've said too much.
Uh-oh. An NDA is about to get, someone's about to get in trouble. So, also with the Oscars, man, like, I wish Willem Dafoe would have won over Sam Rockwell, but I love Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's all these people. I love their work and I want them to succeed. And this is this. This one is what is resonating?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe I'm out of touch. I don't think Shape of Water is Del Toro's strongest film, but I'm so happy it's gotten such success. Yeah, like, and I'm so happy.
Pan's Labyrinth should have won, right?
Pan's Labyrinth should have won, yeah, that year. So, 2006. That was the Departed year. Ooh, maybe not.
Yeah, no one was beating Scorsese.
Yeah, oh. No.
So, and another, one more question. Do you think Dafoe turned in the best performance of 2017? Because he – oh, wait. How about this? Ooh, yeah. It's my favorite performance of 2017.
Yeah, when he walks the guy to the soda machine.
Oh, that's –
like, oh, that's your Oscar clip right there.
The scene he showed wasn't that good, but, like, just the patience that he showed. And when he walks up to that lady, he's like, I'm going to fix the washing machine next week. And she's like, yeah. Just the heart that he showed and, like – like, he was, like, annoyed by them, stern, but he was, like, a father figure. And, like, he was, like, I felt like he was there, like, suffering, like, a penance or something. I don't know. But,
Yeah, because you get the feeling that he has some estranged relationship with his own daughter or his grandchild. It was weird, that relationship between Caleb Landry Jones and Willem Dafoe in the film. I was a little unclear about, like, and I think they were purposely ambiguous about it, but, like, who he's referring to, like, that Willem Dafoe won't go see. So is he, like, his son-in-law? Ooh. And then she's referring to the Willem Dafoe's daughter that he's married to?
Oh, that's not interesting. Sure. And then, like, because he's like, yeah, I said that you sent your best wishes or something, and he's like, no, don't do that. But this year was weird because you had Caleb Landry Jones in Three Billboards, and well, Florida Project, that's not good. But you had Michael Stuhlbarg in Shape of Water, Call Me by Your Name, and The Post. And
yes.
Then, you had a bunch of people in various movies this year.
Yeah, a lot of the same character actors from movie to movie.
That's pretty. I'll go for it. Sorry.
Oh no. It's and Michael Stuhlbarg in especially like giving three very uniquely Stuhlbargian Stuhlbargian performances.
Stuhlbargian.
Stuhlbargian. And he was this is very Stuhlbargian.
You should do that for your next lecture in class.
Fargo. What is Stuhlbargian?
We got what? Serious Man, The Post, Call Me by Your Name, Shape of Water, Fargo. That's it.
He was in. Yeah.
Fargo season 3. I just planned your next semester for you.
Oh, season 3. Oh, there we go. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Oh, and then and Men in Black 3. Don't forget that.
Wait, he was. Oh yeah. That whole movie, I was like, why is he here? And I was like, why is Jemaine Clement in this? And then I started feeling really bad for Brolin. Because Brolin had a bad run there with, like, Jonah Hex, Men in Black 3, Old Boy.
He's so perfectly cast in Men in Black 3, though.
Oh, yeah. He was great in that. Have you seen Only the Brave yet?
I have not. I hear really good things about it, though.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, I know we're kind of rambling, but Only the Brave is the best 2017 film that nobody watched. It's directed by the guy who did Tron and Oblivion, has a great cast. Josh Brolin, Jennifer Connelly, Taylor Kitsch, James Badgedale, and it's just a really – Miles Teller, really good story of these firefighters. And you know what? I think Miles Teller was my second favorite performance of 2017.
Mm.
That's a hot take.
My
right
favorite
there.
Performance – that is a hot take. My favorite performance is 2017 – well, probably my two favorite performances were both in Logan. So Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart.
Oh, dude.
Patrick Stewart is like – of course. That's one of the great – comic book movie performances, maybe just probably the best performance of Patrick Stewart's career. But Hugh Jackman, the physical performance, you just feel his deterioration in every movement he makes. And you see it in his face. And it's such it's such a physical performance, and not even in the stunt scenes. So that was definitely one of my favorite performances.
If you want to read a good article, head to Movies, Films, and Flicks and read Zach's article called Logan Old West New Forms, where you broke down the film.
Yeah, I'm actually in the spring, I'm planning to do a superhero cinema course, which we'll kind of discuss superhero films in the through the lens of like Westerns, through the lens of even the biblical stories, like, and Greek myth and all that, and how they, what is unique about cinema and the superhero film, you know, throughout time. So it's lofty, but I'm planning to do it.
Are you going to add Unbreakable in there?
Oh yeah. That's going to be like day one.
Oh, nice.
day one, Unbreakable. Day two, Split. No, but I love Split.
I was
spoilers. They're not related.
Nah, we are spoiling it. Dude, that anyway. So I know we're. What was I gonna say about McAvoy? I was listening to Eli Roth's Nerdist episode, and he thinks McAvoy put in the best performance of 2017.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about that. That was last year as well. Yeah, he gives an amazing performance. He, you know, it's an outlandish premise, and it's. And he just like sells it. Like he gives each of these personalities such a distinct voice. And you can even tell when he's playing a personality that's trying to imitate another personality, just with the way he moves his face.
You can tell that?
Like whenever he's talking to his psychiatrist and she's pressing him, like, I don't think you're actually this person. I think you're this person. You can just see that in his performance, like him taking that in and kind of trying to manipulate himself to correct what he might be showing.
I need to watch this movie again.
Watch it and sit really close. I watched it in like a Dolby theater and I was like, yes, look at that. His eye twitched. That was amazing.
Yeah, I love the M. Night Shyamalan sense.
Yes. I liked what was The Visit. I liked that, and I really like Split. I was very happy all the way through Split.
I think that's the best Dirty Diaper scene of recent years featured in The Visit.
Oh, yeah. Let's just not.
So before we get into Annihilation, man, I just want to talk about your film Interior. I watched it again today, and I have to tell you, it's the worst movie to watch when you just had a procedure on your neck, because the goosebumps and like some of the jump scares, I like kind of like the beginning noise that's like really loud that hits. Mm-hmm. And then the scene, like a couple of the scenes with like where the things in the background, I like jumped and I'd watched it before and it hurt my neck. So I just wanted to say thank you. For that.
Hey, you're welcome. That was my target audience. Recent neck surgeries.
Is that like your test audience that you brought in?
Yes. I went to a burn ward, and I also went to.
How can I hurt?
I went to a child's
people?
Cancer ward too.
Scare people. Hey, so what kind of jobs?
Unannounced.
what kind of jobs can you get with a film degree?
You're looking at it. with a BFA, not many. With an MFA, you can teach film.
Nice.
With a PhD, ooh.
Are you gonna get a PhD? Are you working on that?
No, the highest degree in film production is an MFA, and the highest degree in cinema studies and theory is a PhD. So I'm gonna consider myself a film production guy and just have that be my term free.
Gotcha. So like you and I actually wrote a script about vampires who need to work day jobs and they work in a blood van. And you had a lot of ideas. Like we floated a lot of ideas. Like how did you come up with Interior?
Well, the original spark of it is just like a scenario that could just be made easily. And when you're making a feature film, that doesn't exist. It's always going to be hard. So let's make it as easy as possible. So one guy in a haunted house for 80 minutes. So like an isolated experience of a person alone in a haunted house. I remember when 1408 came out, I was like, oh no, my idea. And then I watched it like, oh yeah, they don't. Okay, it's fine. They keep finding ways to get him not alone, and like then there's a tiny Samuel Jackson, and you know, he leaves the room altogether. And but yeah, so the genesis was, you know, that and what happens in that house, and the way the script was written was you just kind of keep throwing stuff at him, and you have to find a way to connect it as a more of a cause and effect narrative. So it's not like this happens and then this happens and then this happens. It's that South Park thing, like this happens, so he goes over here, but this happens, therefore he does this. So it kind of started writing itself easily after that. And then I decided at the end it goes completely to hell, because I always wanted to go just to hell in some way.
And so you had a budget of $15,000. How, like, so I've worked on some smaller independent films. Like, how many days did you shoot?
There was 11 days of principal photography in the house, and then like 2 or 3 days of pickups on a soundstage, just some inserts, and the ending dark room stuff was on a soundstage that we had access to.
Nice. Pickup shots are the worst, aren't they?
Yeah. they're terrible to get on set, like the little insert things that you need, like, no one wants to film this. We need to just get people out of here. Let's get going. It's kind of nice to like edit the movie and then see like, I need a shot of his hand. I need a shot of that computer screen, and just do that.
Yeah. I guess it's better to have pickup shots than like a full, you know, like Joe Wright realized he needed to do like all of Dunkirk on Atonement after the edit, you know, like, it's probably a lot easier. It's probably a lot easier to do some pickup shots.
Very much so. Than restaging Dunkirk.
But I liked how the thing, you know, it was more annoying than scary in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, like third way through. And I've always joked around about jerky ghosts. So you kind of built up through that, didn't you?
Yeah. It's like, because if you're actually in a house that's haunted, you're not going to be like, oh my God, what? You're going to try to play it off as much as possible until it gets so bad you actually are profoundly scared. And you also set a level of expectation in the viewer if you see that he's not, you know, the character's not taking this seriously. And so as it progresses, he starts getting legitimately scared. You've kind of established a baseline and established like, Oh, it's really serious if he's scared now.
Oh, and you know, I actually bought into it because when I first got into production, I took some, like, I'm not saying this is a bad job, but I took some really bad jobs just to kind of get my foot in the door and get experience. So you watch movies like this, or like movies like Creep, and I've always been kind of, I've always understood why these people are doing that. And I know, like, I got a job. It's actually a movie called Undocumented Executive, and I got it off of Craigslist when I first moved up. Mm. And I mean, it turned out to be totally legit. I don't know. So I guess some people are like, why would he stay in this house? But as like a person who's getting started in the industry, who just got out of like film degree, like who got a film degree, probably has a lot of debt. Like, I get why you would want to be doing this.
Yeah, that's like the number one thing is like, okay, first draft's done. Is he staying in this house? What can I put in here to keep him there? And then I realized, like, he's going to stay in the house. Like, and unless something, like, is attacking him, he's going to stay in the house. And then there are a couple of things we put in, like the door locks, and there's no key on the door, which that door actually had no deadbolt on the inside. It just had a key, and if the key was gone, you couldn't get out.
Oh, geez.
Like, oh, good. That solves that.
Done. Because I've been on jobs. I did one of my first – I was on a reality show called Dual Survival. And, there was times where I was surrounded by bees. I was walking through gator holes with, like, water up to my neck. Like, you're, like, in some really – like, I think a sane person who doesn't need the money would run away from it.
Right.
No, that was cool. And then also – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go.
Oh, no. I was done.
Yeah, me. I didn't have anything.
I'll edit that out.
Part out.
Yeah. Here, give me a second. All right, cool.
You can do it.
Hey, so 3 a.m. is the, that was what hour? The...
Oh, dead hour.
The dead hour.
Which is something, it's something from like, you know, all those paranormal shows, like, ooh, 3 a.m. is, that's the time when the spirits are most active. Sure. Okay. It's also the time where you're waking up in the middle of the night and still in a dream state, so you'll see anything.
So what's 4 a.m.? No, is it like, all right, so that's,
we're just quoting the movie now. You don't know what this is.
So yeah, actually Interior's on Amazon Prime, so you can catch it. You can catch it if you have Amazon Prime, right?
Yeah.
All right, so I don't want to give away the ending. Normally we spoil everything on this podcast, but I want to keep some surprises. But I'm thinking 4 a.m. is kind of like the slightly conscious, or like almost slightly conscious. Because 5 a.m., some people have to get up for work, right? I used to get up at 6 a.m. for work. Mm-hmm. So 4 a.m. is kind of like you're almost through it.
4 a.m. is like it's the time where you're maybe slightly conscious, or if you stay up late, that's the time where you're, yeah, I need to go to bed. Like, this is too late.
I've been playing Halo like, for too long.
It's definitely the time where everyone's asleep. Like, everyone's in, it's like the only overlap, like everyone will be asleep at 4 a.m., even if they're just getting to sleep or they're about to wake up.
Ooh. So then that's like, I'd like to do research to see how many like attacks, ghost sightings have been at 4 a.m. because everyone's just passed out.
That might be a good list. Like, you know, when do the ghost attacks happen in movies?
Ooh.
Like, what times?
Paranormal Activity makes it easy because they always show you a clock.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, my gosh.
And Poltergeist, I think they have some time codes here and there.
All right, so we got to do ghost attacks and push-up movies.
Push-up movies.
All right, hey,
but
so
you need push-ups.
Oh yeah, not just regular. Like, I'd fall asleep if I was just watching regular push-ups.
Or you'd be on a very specific fetish site.
All right, so we're gonna take a break. We're gonna actually watch some push-ups on some sites, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am tired right now. What about you, Zach? Well, that's because I was doing the crazy push-ups and you were just doing regular push-ups.
Yeah, I kind of segued into sit-ups. I think push-ups are just tired now. I think sit-up cinema, cinema that really gets you on the edge of your seat.
What are some good sit-ups of cinema?
Oh, good sit-ups of cinema.
Like when people are hitting the stomach. The Rocky. Oh, Rocky. He's in the mountains.
Yes, Rocky.
Rocky 4, upside down. In the mountains, in a cabin.
And what's the one where they're like slapping his belly as he does the sit up, like with things,
like ham and like trout.
Yes, yeah, sit up cinema. That's where cinema's heading, I think.
If I had more free time, I would totally do it. The best sit ups of cinema, and
I'm sure Jodie Foster does some sit ups in Silence of the Lambs. I'm sure that happens.
Oh yeah. Like, crunches don't look good on screen, but sit-ups look better.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, this is bad, but Major Payne, where he's like,
got it. Best sit-ups in cinema history, Christian Bale, American Psycho, while Texas Chainsaw Massacre plays on the TV.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to beat. I think
that's how you do sit-ups.
You know what the best training montage of all time is? And I'm going on. I wrote a post recently about the 18 best villains of the 21st century. You can go find it on Movies, Films, and Flicks. But there's a scene in You Don't Mess with the Zohan where John Turturro is training to fight Adam Sandler. And John Turturro is like punching all this meat. And then he punches a cow, but then the cow's still alive. And the cow's like, rrr! And they like John Turturro. And only the way that John Turturro can does, like jumps back, like, ah! Like, he, like, screams out. But, like, why are they hanging up live cows upside down? Like, why is he punching? Why doesn't he know it's alive? But just, like, Judd Apatow and Robert Smigel wrote it. I'm telling you.
I remember that being particularly, like, a better-than-average Adam Sandler movie. And it was before the whole, like, really knowing Judd Apatow and his potential.
I love it. I think it's worth a watch. And I don't think nobody does sit-ups in that, but... I think you got a good one with American Psycho. That and Rocky IV will have to go head to head.
Training montage and Wet Hot American Summer may be better.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'm gonna have to put together a list.
Where he's trying to do the dance, he can't do it. Like, you have to do this dance in order to be me, the chef.
I don't think anyone's done a best sit-ups pose, so I'll look that up and I'll tackle that right now.
Do you like a Google algorithm for like the first time some list comes out? Like, and you're just racking them all up.
Well, all right. This is going to sound weird, but I mean, we have a great following, you know, movies, films, and flicks, but like, sometimes I wonder if people really want to read my review for Wonder Woman, or they want to read, you know, me breaking down how far the creature from It Follows traveled.
Right.
Like I would love to write about Wonder Woman. I love that movie. But I also think on the website, it would get drowned out. But when I contribute stuff like that, you know, like Bloody Disgusting and Dread Central pick it up. So maybe I should just go through and find out what lists haven't been. Like I did a list about the best throwing of a rock.
What one?
Monty Python, Life of Brian.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then I had Mom and Dad Save the World, where he's like, this is a rock. And you take it and you put your arm back and then you throw it. And then he knocks a guy out with a rock. I have The Incredibles in there. And then I had The Loss of a Limb.
Do you have Hayden Christensen in Attack of the Clone?
Ow!
It's all Obi-Wan's fault. He's holding me back.
Isn't that where he's like, I hate fixing things? Isn't that the scene?
Yeah, I mean, I'm good at fixing things, but I can't fix this or something like that.
Were you in the theater you were in the theater with me, right, when we watched it?
Because then told me about it, because I saw it at like the day before screening when we got the print, because we were working at the movie theater.
Yeah.
And like, all right, build the print, like, gotta watch it, and then, you know, the Star Wars logo comes up, like, oh shit, I'm about to watch a Star Wars movie. I forgot. All right. And then you get into it and it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I was so much more bummed out about that movie than I was The Phantom Menace, because it took a longer time for Phantom Menace to sink in. Attack of the Clones was like instantly, no. No movie.
Stop.
He told him.
I got big laughs when he threw that little rock and I went, ow. And like the whole theater started laughing when I did that.
Yeah, the way you described it to me is like, he's holding me back. Oh.
Did you watch Ultraviolet with me?
Yes.
And
okay. So
yeah,
we got the whole theater to turn on the movie. And it was one of the best screenings ever.
Yeah, because like, didn't like halfway through I started laughing, right? Isn't that like, or like a third of the way through? Like, or no, wait.
Yeah, pretty early on. Like, once you establish who this villain is and the stupid things Mila Jovovich can do. It's just, we start laughing really loud, and then everyone else started laughing because we were laughing, and it got to the point where everyone was just finding things to yell at the screen. And we like successfully turned the audience on that film. I am so sorry, director of Ultraviolet, but after the movie called Starlight 20 or whatever we were.
But the movie was like, we did it in like earnestness, though. Like, I didn't do it because like I hate this movie. It was when William Fichtner was like, why won't you won't let anyone in, or and then I just went and then someone else started laughing. And I tell this story all the time too. We're at Gangs of New York, and I think this is when the iPhone had first come out, and the girl in front of us turned it on. It was, and you were like, that shit's like a lightsaber.
I remember that, yeah. Oh, and then someone behind us was translating the movie the whole time into Spanish for their guests.
We had cell phones and a translator while watching Gangs in New York.
I'm Bill the Butcher. Sit up and do Bill the Butcher.
But that was like, you had a good comment there. Like, that was like almost the beginning of the end, like cell phones. Because the flip phones weren't too bright.
No, it was that iPhone. Like, I say that to my film students too. Like, you know, don't turn your phones on during the movie. It is like setting off a lightsaber in the theater. Yeah. Ooh, a text.
And then your eyes are like, you're like a bug in a theater. Your eyes are immediately brought to it. And you're like,
didn't we? What was like the shark? We saw. Was it Open Water and just like everyone in the front had their phones on?
Yep.
And it was actually making the screen dimmer?
Yep.
2006 was a very strange time.
people are like, we got these new gadgets. And they hadn't, like, banned them from theaters, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, so let's jump on our second listener question here. And so someone asked, like, hey, you know, what are you guys covering? What are you doing? And I told them we're going to be talking about, you know, various subjects, the Academy Awards, Annihilation. And so they're like, hey, the bear scene in Annihilation scared the crap out of me. What movie scenes scare you?
Mm.
All right, so I'll always remember this. I watched The Descent at your house for the the first time. And you looked at me and you're like, there's a scene in this movie that'll make you pee. He's like, I peed a little bit. And I was like, what? And then that scene showed up and it damn near almost made me, almost made me pee. Where they first meet the crawlers in the cave where it's just right behind her. I think that's one of my favorite scares of all time.
Yes. It's the found footage scare. Like they're on her camera and they just pan over and it's just like standing there. All right.
I just lost my shit. And, you know, I watched the Blu-ray, The Making Of, and they did that all, like, obviously they didn't film in caves, but the set design's really impressive on that film, the way they built it all in studio. Yeah.
And the sound design, because they are able to create depth just with the reverb on the voices that they're going to put on in later in post. So you feel like a world greater than what you see, because when she yells, it kind of reverberates around you. A little like in space.
Oh wow! I never even thought about that. Hey, that's why
I showed it last semester in sound design because it was Halloween on sound design day. I'm like, what's a good sounding horror movie? Hey, The Descent.
Did your students like it?
Oh, they hated it and loved it at the same time because it effectively scared them.
Oh, that's awesome! And then
I had one walkout.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of the blood?
No, it was just tense. Like, the claustrophobia. I find that movie is much scarier before the monsters show up. The monsters are great, but, like, he really sets the scene with just the claustrophobia and her getting stuck, and then that rock shifts. Oh, no thank you.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think – but I like – what I like about when the monsters are introduced is how urgent it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't just become like a sit-and-wait movie. Like, I love 30 Days a Night, but there's a scene where they just kind of hang out. That kind of weighs it down for me. But I still think it's an effective movie. But in The Descent, it's just like, go, 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 go. And, oh, man, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it. Like, I love how
– And there's a palpable plot surprise in that latter half where she – Juno is, you know, fighting them off and then turns around and sticks your favorite friend in the neck. And the entire room we watched it in was just like, oh, no. It's like, I've shown you some of the greatest films of all time, but you've had the greatest reaction to this moment. So that means something.
Oh, that's cool. If I ever become a film professor, I'm using it.
Do it.
You know what got me recently was Gerald's Game. And
The Moonlight Man, really.
Yeah, The Moonlight Man. I had to leave the room. I watch every horror film known to man. Or I at least try to. But they still get my wife was sitting there all stoic. Like, she doesn't really care. But like, she's into it. She just doesn't get scared, I guess. Like, I'm the one who screams. Like during Insidious, when the red lipstick demon like made his first appearance behind Patrick Wilson, I yelled. I legit yelled, and she's like, I scared her because I yelled. But Gerald's Game, that dude's creepy, man.
Yeah, and it's I read the book, and it was my favorite Stephen King book for a long time, and I always wanted to see it made into a movie, and then Mike Flanagan made it. For Netflix, and I like Mike Flanagan's work. I don't think I've seen a bad film he's made. Like, Ouija 2 was solid. Really love Oculus.
Hush is very good.
Hush is very good. I'm excited he's doing the Dr. Sleep, the Shining sequel.
He's doing that?
Yeah, he's doing that. That's his next film.
So that gave me a nightmare. And so I read it on the All right, so I was on my honeymoon, and on the flight over, the TVs wouldn't work, so we flew to Italy, and so we just kind of read the whole time, so I finished off that book, Dr. Sleep, and we ended up taking a cruise, like, along the Mediterranean, and one night I woke up yelling because we left our cabin door open out to the patio, And I thought I saw that lady. That's the main antagonist, I guess. Is that antagonist of Dr. Sleep? And I woke up yelling. I haven't done that in a while.
You have night terrors?
No, I don't. You know, I scream myself to sleep, but I don't wake up and screaming. You know what I mean? But yeah, that movie.
What is your marriage like? Oh my God. I scream myself to sleep.
But yeah, no, that's the one time that like of recent memory that just really gave me a nightmare was Dr. Sleep. But I think I can pick some of your scariest moments. Mulholland Drive.
Oh yeah. The Winkies, the diner in Winkies. The man behind the, it was actually a woman behind the diner. And I remember I saw that at the Beach Theater in 2001 on its first, run.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I'm watching it just like, nothing they can show is worse than I'm going to imagine. So I'm safe here. It's like, it's creepy though. And then it pops out and I thought, oh God, it's so much worse than I could ever have imagined. Oh God.
Yeah. That got me bad. You told me to watch that movie because of that scene.
Yeah. It's a strong scene. And then the movie has really grown in stature. And I remember coming out of it because I was a David Lynch fan, but it wasn't like, I was still too young to really grasp David Lynch. I saw it as like, what the hell happened? And then on the drive home, oh, you know what? I think I get it. And then a week later, oh no, this.
Yeah,
I've had that every David Lynch film since that. Like, even the Twin Peaks new seasons, like, yeah, I think I get it. Oh no. Oh no. It's something else completely.
So what was Mulholland Drive?
I think it's pretty clear that there's a defining separation of reality at the end. And are we asking like what the street is or what what the movie is about?
Give me a 40 word breakdown of Mulholland Drive.
Well, it starts with the camera going to sleep, like going to a pillow and falling asleep, and then we kind of wake up at one point. And our main character is a completely different character, as if what we have just watched is her dream. And then we kind of go back in time in a nonlinear way, seeing who this new person is and what her relationship to all these people in her dream was.
Oh.
And then I have another theory, but that's another, that's just for me.
Let's see. What else has scared you in recent years?
So recently this summer I watched Pulse, the original Pulse by Kiyoshi Kurosawa from 2001. Arrow just released it on Blu-ray. And there's this one scene where a guy goes downstairs and then a woman shows up, and it's this one shot of a woman for probably like 30 seconds slowly walking towards the camera, seemingly in slow motion, and then she trips in a weird way. And the thing with Pulse is a lot of horror movies are like, something sudden is scary, and the fear of something sudden, and the more you look at it, the less scary it is. With Pulse, and every scare in Pulse, the more you look at something, the scarier it gets.
Huh.
And it gave me a legitimate nightmare about mortality and ghosts. And so it's like, ooh, that was unpleasant, but I love it.
That's rare with movies where the more you see it, the scarier it gets.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of really much. Maybe the Paranormal Activity movies where it stays on the master for a long time, but you're expecting something to like jump, or the tension to peak at a point of release. And in this movie, it was like, oh no, just stop. Just cut away from it. Just cut away.
That's really interesting. Like, that's pretty interesting, man. Like, I was thinking about Event Horizon. People want a director's cut of that, because they want to see more hell. But they actually found the footage in a salt mine in Transylvania and they can't use it. But I think if they showed more of it, it wouldn't have as much of an effect.
That's true, and it's very impactful in the small doses it has. And just the idea of like, this ship went to hell and now it's back, and the sacrifice Lawrence Fishburne makes at the end. So I'm going to sacrifice myself and go to hell.
What a good
guy. To save greatest guy ever. It's hell.
I would definitely name, if I had kids, I would name all my kids after whoever Lawrence Fishburne played in the movie.
It's like, I got to save Natasha Richardson. I think that's who was in it.
Yeah. And then.
And then that other dude.
Yeah.
I got to save these two. Don't do that.
So jumping into save yourself. Jumping into Annihilation. This is by Alex Garland, who wrote Sunshine, Never Let You Go. He wrote and directed Ex Machina. I actually watched Sunshine, first Blu-ray I ever saw at your house. But yeah, so this guy.
Yeah.
This guy wrote 28 Days Later, Dread. He writes some really great stuff. But this movie's been really interesting. I wanted to talk about this with you. It's getting flack for being too smart.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
People are kind of so Alex Garland got final cut on it. And I guess Paramount watched it. And they were kind of like, we love it, but this is not going to make money overseas. So they sold it to Netflix to at least make some money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think
Paramount owned Annihilation. I think it was a Paramount release.
Yeah.
Or Paramount and Netflix have a really good relationship right now. Cause that's Cloverfield Paradox too.
Yeah. And that was a bad movie. That was probably the most generic movie I've seen. But I don't know. It was kind of, I also found out something interesting. I was researching the movie, and they wrote a rift developed between the film's producers, Scott Rudin, who did Lady Bird and Social Network, and David Ellison, who did Geostorm and Terminator Genesis. According to reports, Ellison began to worry. He began to worry that the film was too intellectual and too complicated. Ellison submitted notes on how to soften the film, which included making Portman's character more sympathetic and changing the ending. But Alex Garland had final cut, and it only made 11. You know what? You know what? They said it only made $11 million here, but for a hard sci-fi intellectual R-rated film, $11 million's not horrible, right?
Yeah, it's like Solaris making $11 million. That's pretty good for Solaris.
Yeah. I don't know. So, what'd you think? Did you think this movie was too smart? Did you think?
I don't know. I don't even know what too smart means.
Yeah. Like, they're saying it's too complicated, too intellectual. But I thought it was a fairly straightforward story.
Yeah. I think the issues I had on first viewing, and I want to watch it again because I have, I think we have to get into spoiler territory here.
So. All right. Yeah. So, we're going to wreck Annihilation here for y'all. And so, just to drop it, I guess we'll do a quick explanation. Annihilation is about Natalie Portman, Tessa Thompson, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez, and Tuva Novotny, five scientists, medics. They decide to go into this, what do they call it, the Shimmer?
The Shimmer, yes.
The Shimmer, because military explorations that had gone in, no one had come back. So these five women go into the Shimmer to find out what it is, to get to this lighthouse, find the origin, get information on it before the Shimmer slowly expands and takes over the world. And there's other, there's other motivations. Natalie Portman, her husband Oscar Isaac may or may not have gone into it. So there's different motivations, but it's basically them going into the Shimmer to find what it is. Does that sound like a pretty good breakdown?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think I was always engaged with it and really wanting to know what's happening next. And it wasn't that I wanted to have it explained to me. I think I wanted a better handle on the characters in it to take me on the journey. The way I was completely on board with Domhnall Gleeson's character in Ex Machina, as essentially your avatar into this situation. You don't have that with Annihilation because the theory I'm seeing a lot, and I think I had while I was watching, is that you can't trust Portman's narrative of the events, and so you're watching it from the point of view of an unreliable narrator. And I think it's really interesting because that sets up that I don't know it's a weird thing because you can't really fully grasp onto her and follow her, but you're definitely, I was definitely into it all the way through. And the ending I thought was just pure awe-inspiring amazingness with the mirror image, thing.
Oh yeah. The phosphorus grenade and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I think I kept noticing her tattoo was there. and then it wasn't there, and then it was there, and then it wasn't there.
The eight.
And I want to see it again. Like, it's there in this when she's like telling the scientists, you know, in flashback structure, when she's like telling the story, it's obviously on there. And when she's in the shimmer, it's not quite there. And they'll like show that it's not there. And then it's there at the very end.
And other characters had those too.
Yeah.
When did they get those?
I don't know. It's enough that like, there's definitely more to unlock with this movie with another viewing. And that's actually very rare nowadays, because a lot of times you are, unless there's like a, you know, complete twist at the end where it's like, oh, it completely have, you know, reinterprets how I feel about the film, so I have to see it again. This is more like The Shining, in which like, okay, what happened? Oh, wait, he's over there. That doesn't make sense, but wait. So, and there's just little hidden things, and I think it's going to be better the more you see it. And I want to see it again. And also the effects with the shimmer and the way light is refracting, the separation of white to the colors, and everything has it. It's just this, it's a beautiful film to look at too. And apparently they did a lot of that in camera.
Oh, it's so, yeah, like I loved, they did a lot of that in camera.
Yeah. Like they'll either shine big multicolored lights through the trees, or they put something on the lens. I couldn't quite. I think they're keeping a lot of that secret, like, so they weren't like completely saying what they were doing, but it seemed like a lot of it was in camera.
And I like a lot of it how Garland was saying, like, none of it is bullshit, but it's fiction, if that makes sense. And he actually reached out to this guy, Adam Rutherford, who only basically, he's like, I only answered my phone to three people, my wife, my kids, and Alex Garland. And I guess this guy, he's a British geneticist named Adam Rutherford, and I guess they make these movies as science supports the story. I don't know, I thought that was pretty interesting. So I think you're right. There's a lot to it. A lot of the stuff in this movie, like, they're saying it's fiction. It's not bullshit, but it's fiction, but it still makes sense. So I actually would love to watch it again. Like, I love the scene with, like, the crocodile shark.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the human
plant. And it's played so quietly, too. It's not like an action scene. They don't boost up the music when, like, oh, no, they're being attacked by a shark gator. It's, oh, this is a thing that's happening, and we're just shooting at it, and it's crazy looking.
It like, wasn't very good.
I was
at
really
attacking.
Noticeable. No, not at all. Well, it's a new species. It has no sense of like evolutionary history or background.
Maybe
I
it just
get
likes
that.
Maybe it just likes backpacks.
It does like backpacks.
Now Garland, he kind of has a theme with kind of madness, doesn't he? Like, you 28 weeks later, Christopher Eccleston. And at the end, when everything just goes mad, right? And then you have Sunshine, where everything goes bonkers.
Complete, yeah.
The Beach. I'll Never Let Me Go. I don't know how much that goes into madness. But he always takes characters in his films never have a good time.
Oh, God, no. It's like they're always they're presented with some kind of new reality, and the way they adapt to it is like an integration against their will. You know, it's like Domino Gleeson. Oh, there's AI. So I guess, oh, I'm being manipulated into liking this AI because you've programmed it, and like, but I'm already invested in it. And then like Sunshine is like one of my favorite sci-fi movies, except I know the ending is not very good.
No, it's in my top 20 of all time, dude. I love that. We had a great time watching it. Like, I don't think I've ever been more. I got so brought into that movie, and it does take you out at the end. But all the like great colors and noises,
yeah.
You're kind of like, you don't think about it until later. Then you're like, wait, what?
It's like someone from the Shimmer gets on that ship at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Of Sunshine.
I mean, the colors are kind of right. So, like, what do you think about? So I was talking to my wife about this, and I know that this is coming from like a dude, but I thought it was pretty refreshing how it wasn't like five women on a mission. It was just five people. Like, they were just people.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was
very
refreshing.
Four people. four people, one Tessa Thompson, who is above us all.
Yeah.
So.
You know what, though? Tessa Thompson was in War for Everyone. So in 2017, she had War for Everyone, Thor Ragnarok. Well, I guess 2018 now, but she had Annihilation, War on Everyone, and Thor Ragnarok. I like her, like, Kill 'Em All trilogy.
Yes. But she steals Thor Ragnarok from everyone.
Oh, she's hilarious in that movie. And I liked her a lot in this, too. I thought the scene where she was finally able to monologue and turn into a plant was really great. And I don't know, I guess, I know it sounds weird saying, but some movies are just like, I just want to focus on people as characters. Like, I don't give a shit if they're a dude or a woman or, like, I just want a movie with, obviously every movie has characters, but I liked how Garland treated it like that. Like when Portman's like, what, women? She's like, no, scientists. And then that was it. Like, I know it's 2018, but that was refreshing to me.
Yeah.
And I thought Natalie Portman was kind of bold. Her character was definitely sort of, there was a cold element to her. And I guess it's kind of weird how you have movies like Arrival and Gravity where they all have like something. I guess she never lost a kid, so that makes her different. Mm. But I guess I never thought
about
it.
She lost a husband.
Yeah, she lost a husband. I thought that was pretty interesting. But no, I thought Portman was really good in this movie. Did you like the character?
I felt a distance towards her that I probably attributed to a flaw in the film.
Oh.
And now I'm like reconsidering that. And probably much in the same way that everyone who saw The Shining, like, oh, Jack Nicholson's just out of control at front, you know, off the top. He starts out crazy. And then as you think about it and reconsider it, wait, there's a purpose to this. There's something. It's about something different than what I originally anticipated. Because I'm going into it expecting something along the lines of Ex Machina and Arrival. And it gives me something more in line with a Kubrick film. Or a Tarkovsky film. Like, it's pretty, not shamelessly, but it's pretty influenced by Stalker, in which they go into this forbidden zone and, you know, there's changes to their biology when they're in there.
Dang it, man. I gotta watch this movie now again. Thanks.
Hey, Alec Darlin, I'll sell people to watch your movie again.
I wonder if there's going to be a commentary on it, because I'd love to listen to that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't listen to Ex Machina or anything, so I'm way behind my commentaries. It's hard enough to get movies in, so let alone someone talking over it.
And the problem with commentaries is, like, sometimes you can put movies on in the background that, like, you just want to catch up on, that you're not looking to take too seriously, but commentaries, you kind of have to listen to them.
Right.
I know that's not like Shakespeare. It's not like that won't be on my grave. I like to focus on that. Do not listen to What We Do in the Shadows DVD commentary, though. They straight up insult the person listening to it the entire time. There's some gems in there, but then they're like, why do people even listen to this? This is crap. And I bought the movie to like listen to it. So I'm like, you mothers.
Thanks, Taika.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy's not going to do anything. I just kind of wanted to talk about this movie with you because it just seems like it was very auteurish, and I think a lot of audiences, and I think the name Annihilation and the marketing of it, you know, people are like, it has the single scariest scene of the year with that talking bear. And do you think that marketing?
Yes, the talking bear. Oh my God.
Do you think that marketing hurts it though?
I think that marketing is one of the most harmful things, especially in horror movies and like genre movies in general, because it's always about overselling and overstating. I'm sure they come at, is it They Come at Night? Or what's the one with Joel Edgerton?
Oh, it comes at night.
It could come at night. Maybe it does. But, you know, that the ad campaign for that movie is just selling it as like, this is the second coming of horror. And this is going to be the scariest thing you ever see. And when you watch it, it's like, oh, it's a good character drama. And
yeah.
There's some horror elements in it. The end. And people get upset about that, and you know, kind of rightly so. They've been sold something, and they don't get what was sold. It doesn't hit the right genre. It doesn't fulfill the genre requirements that they are.
I wrote about Crimson Peak, and it got a lot of traction because I was like, "What is Crimson Peak?" Like, it got marketed as like this ghost story, but it's like a gothic romance. I still can't.
Yeah, it's basically. It's Guillermo del Toro going on talk shows going like, you know, it's not a scary movie. You know, I mean, I know they're selling it, is it? But it's more like this. And they're like, okay, that makes more sense. But no one's – you're too afraid that people won't see that. Or at least the studio is too afraid.
And then Mother, too. Like Mother had a weird – I don't think anyone knew what they were getting into with Mother. It got an F cinema score. I watched it. I watched Mother and I loved it. It's like a roller coaster ride.
It is a fun movie. And I think it pairs well with Noah. It's like a good like double feature of Noah and Mother from Aronofsky.
That guy delivers movies that you just don't expect. Like, it's just on Jennifer Lawrence's face the whole time, and there's nothing subtle about Mother. Like, its themes are right out there.
Yeah, it's not subtext, it's text. It's a straight up adaptation of the Bible.
Yeah,
spoilers.
Yeah, it is in no way. It was kind of interesting watching a movie like that because it felt very like Blunt Force Trauma, but that's what he was kind of going for. And so some people are some people are like, oh, it's so obvious and it's like stupid and it just made me laugh. But that's what he was doing.
Yeah. I think it being obvious had a purpose. Like, I think Black Swan is a little too obvious. Like, it literally has a character going, your white swan is very good, but your black swan, that's where you need help. Wink. and this one is just as obvious, but there is the obviousness is purposeful. Okay, so it's obviously this, but to what purpose? And the purpose is to show the same narrative that is written from a more God's point of view, telling it from this new point of view, which is another version of God. I don't think it's like, I think it's just the two warring figures of God, like of Father Creator, Mother Nature, and how Mother Nature would react to these same things happening. And that's in the obviousness has a purpose in that. I'm fine with the obvious. I think it's, I think if you just dismiss it as obvious, you're not looking at what's obvious about its obviousness, if you will.
And I love that the Gleason brothers were cast, and then one of them gets killed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, poor Gleasons.
But hey, man, I just wanted to say thank you for joining us. And before we wrap up, man, do you got any plugs for us?
Anything to promote? No, I just got Interior on Amazon Prime. If you watch it and hate it, don't say anything. If you love it, rate it. and I feel like we talked about like Annihilation is, I don't know, but it's good. I feel like there was so much to talk about, and it's like its use of depression and like things like that. But it's a movie that really needs multiple viewings to digest fully, and that's very rare today.
We probably should have led with Annihilation.
Yeah.
But
we'll do another one where we have seen it twice and then like, oh, you know what? It actually does suck. We don't.
All right. So we'll do
I did like Geostorm Britter. So
wait. Oh, dude, Geostorm. I got a great post coming out about Geostorm. April 1st. Oh, April 1st. Look for an amazing post that I'm writing about Geostorm. I'm writing an epic about it. But and also, I saw your Blu-ray when you do conventions for your film. I saw that you sold your Blu-ray. Where can I buy that? Because I want to listen to the commentary.
That's a good question. I haven't put it up for sale like online yet, but I'm hoping to do that pretty soon. Yeah, I did a commentary for it. It's insane to listen to my own voice talking about this movie and a bunch of other special features. Yeah, I don't have a release date for it yet. I have set up like the selling of it, but one day in the future.
All right. So when it is available, I'll let you all know on the podcast.
Hopefully.
And then, for us, just head to iTunes, make sure to rate, review, subscribe. Thank you for listening. Also, if you have any listener questions, make sure to send them our way, and look for our eventual second viewing of Annihilation 3-hour podcast. So for me, Mark, and Zachary Beckler, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.